And I don't know if you've ever made plans and then somewhere along the line, something divine happens called life. And everything kind of switches. And it was not planned. Mark prayed today. And as he was talking about Psalm 46, I don't find it ironic at all that our church is 13 years old. And it's like our teenage years. We're going into this kind of middle stage or beginning stage of puberty. And we're experiencing things about life. And for sometimes it's this, for some of us, it's the first friend breakup we have where we realize that maybe there's a shift in relationships. And you know, that friend group you had in elementary school is not the same group it used to be. For others, it may be that first romantic kind of feeling you have. I don't know when you kind of, if you guys have dated before, no matter whatever your flavor is of dating. But when you were in middle school and you have your first kind of like relationship, those feelings can feel really strong. And I don't know what it's like, but you have that crush, that feeling, and then someone like you like them and they like you back. And I don't know, like, and you young bucks, you know, y'all, in fact, if you are of a certain age, and I probably talked about this before, if you had a crush on somebody, you had to write it down on a piece of paper, and you would write, "Do you like me? Yes or no? Check yes, check no." And the anticipation was probably worse than the answer. Nowadays, you can hit somebody up in their DM, you know, "Hey, let me get your, you know, like, hey, let me text you real fast," or whatever. But you had to wait a certain amount of time in that anticipation. And when you are 12, 13, 14 years old, that anticipation, those big feelings can be the, and the feelings you have when you get a yes, woo! I mean, you are in love. No one can tell you nothing. Everything on the radio is playing your song. I mean, it is wonderful. I mean, I was a child of the 90s, and the love songs were loving. You know what I mean? "Dream Lover" by Mariah Carey, "Come Rescue Me," "Come If You Please Come Around." Oh, I mean, all of it. And I'm like the R&B type of love songs. I mean, Aaliyah, all of it was R&B-ing. And then, if you are also a child of the 90s, we had heartbreak songs because you also experienced those same emotions when you were 11, 12, or 13 of that heartbreak. And I don't know, but there were some ministers back then. I'll call them ministers, like Mary J. Blige. If you've ever heard a Mary J. Blige song, when she was going through her trauma, she was speaking to the 13-year-old who just got his heart broke. She was speaking to that 12-year-old who liked somebody and then they liked somebody else, you know, and understanding that we as that adolescent feelings, our emotions can shift so you can like somebody one moment and like somebody next. She spoke to that, or some of these R&B artists spoke to that person who liked somebody one moment and you had your partner and at the same time you got another partner. Not to say that we're not condoning it. We're just saying that maybe you like two people at the same time and those feelings were real. And you're like, "How can I like two people at the same time?" It just happens. Or it could be a little bit more serious, where we experience life. And maybe you're 13 and you experience loss of, you know, parents splitting. Maybe the death of your grandparent or someone like that, or maybe just life isn't fair at 13. And you're experiencing this and you're experiencing this, and as we're experiencing it in the physical, we kind of experience it in the spiritual as well. And I can say that right now, for many members in this room right now, Spark is 13 years old and we're experiencing some big feelings. We're experiencing life. For some of you in this room, today is a hard day because you don't have the cultural celebration that comes with a regular, healthy parent relationship. For others in this room, you're realizing that you are taking care of your parents and you may think about the mortality or of your parents, but it actually hits. For others, you're dealing with the expectations you've had for children or what you've figured for family planning, and it isn't going like you planned. And for some of us, we're experiencing those really big feelings of a breakup again because you were in this relationship, this marriage for a long time that you thought would last forever, and it just isn't working. And we as a church are experiencing this together. And what I've learned is that surgery was only the beginning. Because, well, these big feelings is I had to learn how to rehab. We had to learn how to walk. I've had to learn how to do things over again or make adjustments to everyday things. I can tell you as a person who works out, who has an athletic background, who has the American hubris and pride, there is nothing more humbling than being in a rehab center and having someone assist you with wiping yourself after having to go to the bathroom. There's something very humbling about that. And you feel shame, but you understand that that person is there to help you. There's something very humbling about the fact that your church community shows up in a way and sees you at an incredibly vulnerable time and you don't know what to do. And with that being said, I just want to say, I know that many of you are going through life right now, but I still want to say thank you, Spark Church. Thank you for every DoorDash gift card, for every visit, for every car, for every meal provided on Meal Train. Because I know that many of you are going through life and somehow you still found a way to be the church. And that's a hard thing to do. As I was learning how to walk on bandages with crutches and for many weeks, somehow I made it on Sunday. In fact, one of the little human beings came up to me today and said, I remember when you had braces on your legs or you were in cast. And I would say that Spark Church would check on me or at least see me every week, and it was quite refreshing. My wife can attest that there was a point when I couldn't walk and I would have to lift myself, and I'm a pretty big guy, into the car, and I would just be sitting there for an hour, 2 hours on end, but I can make it in here. And many of you guys saw that progress where when I had the braces on, bandages, walker, wheelchair, to now walking with a cane and still in the process. And so thank you guys for being the church. Thank you for every word of encouragement. Thank you for checking in on my wife because many of you now are primary caregivers and you are experiencing that brunt where you're taking care of somebody and they're all the focus seems to be on the person you're taking care of, which they need. But sometimes we forget that the caregivers need love too. And thank you for checking in on my wife who's had to deal with me because, well, I'm going back to work on limited duty and would have liked to stay out longer, but there's this thing called an economy. This thing that we will get into. But yeah. So we are winding down our series in the book of Jacob. Well, more commonly known as James, but as they said in Common to America, his mama named him Jacob, so I'm gonna call him Jacob. As stated earlier, you guys have been so good to me during this process, and I can't thank you enough. Pastor Danielle opened up the series with laying out the framework for Jacob. For Jacob was writing to a group of people who were experiencing life as a religious minority, while facing life-threatening challenges that came with following Jesus. And Jacob would give them the opening charge to find joy in those trials. Pastor Danielle will remind us that the game hadn't changed, it's just the players. I mean, how or what do you do when life just lifes? And as a testament to PD and Kevin, Spark was not founded on personalities, which allows Spark Church to participate in supporting even our main teachers as they are experiencing life, which can be very hard for many churches and faith communities, because more often than not, churches are not set up for everyone, everywhere, to minister to the main pastor and their family. Oftentimes, the structures are set up in a way where the main leadership is here and you guys are there, and it is all about what they can give you. If we're honest with ourselves, times in America, church is just another form of entertainment. And our pastors and leaders are just another form of entertainers. So I'm very grateful that we are at a church, that our pastors are not so high up, and that the congregation is not so far down, that we can participate in walking through ministering to our pastors as well as being ministered to. PK reaffirmed our values through the intentionality of Spark by walking us through Jacob 2, and the somewhat blueprint for us as a local body to fight the descent into disorganization, chaos, and examine and correct dysfunctions, and for us to build up healthy long-term relationships, and really an affirmation to of Spark's core values of reconciliation and reputation. This was followed by Pastor O'Meara reminding us that Jacob, known as James' letter, tells us we should apply the modern-day teachings of the modern prophet K-Dot, a.k.a. Kendrick Lamar, and sit down as teachers and be humble, laying out the high standard for those who presume to be teachers to that body and the general church as well. Also, in one of the more practical teachings of Jacob, we're taught to watch our tongues, although I think today that principle now applies to maybe, just maybe, we should watch our fingers and what we type and how we have Twitter courage, or when we react on something online in the comment section. I've done it before, felt embarrassed, had to go back and delete the comment. Last week, Pastor Tom Pastor Tom came and looked at James' very practical teachings and how to live in which other in others despite disagreements, and what are true intentions behind those disagreements, and what does submission to God look like when our motives and our ambitions are not quite in line, and just when real life hits all at the same time. How do we follow Jesus, not just with association because we follow Jesus because we're Christians, but how do we follow Jesus during a time when our algorithms seem to be cultivating an increasingly politically polarized world? And as we're going into the closing sections of the writings, we look at Jacob's writings to wealthy people in the community. Jacob seems to address the trappings of rich people in the community, and he does this throughout the letter. The writer of Jacob seems to address it very early on in James. We see it in James 9, 1 through 10, James 2, 1 through 6, and also verses 14 through 17, James 4, 13 through 16, and our text today, Jacob 5, 1 through 6. This is written to 12 tribes who are a diaspora, spread out all across the Greco-Roman world. The letter seems to address the unconscious bias and human tendency to show intention and undue reverence to wealthy people in a particular congregational setting. For any of you who've been to church, let's go back one. Okay, that's too soon. And I've lost them. We'll read the scripture right now. Jacob 5, 1 through 6. Come now, you rich people, weep and wail for the miseries that are coming you. Your riches have rotted, your clothes are moth-eaten, your gold and your silver, and it will eat your flesh like fire. You've laid up treasure during the last days. Listen, the wages of the laborers who moved your fields, which you kept back by fraud, cry out. and the cries of the harvester reached the ears of the Lord of hosts. You've lived on the earth in luxury and in pleasure. You have nourished your hearts in the day of slaughter. You have condemned and murdered the righteous one who did not resist you. Like, if you've been in church long enough, in a church setting long enough for any amount of time, you're going to hear messages about money. This can be a very sensitive topic and conjure up images of televangelists and mega church pastors, you know, men of God who've had large status symbols that represent material wealth. In fact, there's a well-known gospel, well-known theology known as prosperity gospel movement, where an author known as Kate Bowler, who's a Duke professor of divinity school, defines the prosperity gospel as an offshoot of Pentecostalism that developed a special vocabulary and how faith reaches out into the invisible and brings back these material things. Jacob, the writer of Jacob, tends to go back to some really core principles when he's talking to the diaspora at large. He hearkens the verses of Leviticus 19:13. Do not defraud your neighbor and do not hold back wages. He also tends to call upon that scripture in Proverbs 22:22-23. Do not defraud, exploit the poor, because they are poor. Do not curse the needy in court, for the Lord will take upon their cause. Going back to Dr. Kate Bowler, when asked about the prosperity gospel in a 2014 interview, she says this: I think in some ways, oh wow, slide didn't come up, okay. I think she goes, I think in some ways, okay, whoa. Ooh. Okay, I think in some ways, it's kind of indigenous to the American gospel. It's a rugged individualism, and it's supernatural bootstraps. It's an incredible high anthropology meeting a sense of what people can't we can't do. There's really no nation that seems to be more confident in what they can accomplish. Bowler, like many other scholars, would offer critiques of the movement, saying that it can lead to toxic positivity. Bowler, she argues that the movement promotes a relentless toxic positivity that denies the reality of human pain, failure, and limitation. It promotes a culture of shame and blame. Prosperity theology links health and wealth directly to faith. It implies that those who are sick or poor simply lack of faith, and leading to a profound shame just because life happens. People get sick. People die. It's the illusion of control. It fosters the idea that life can be perfectly managed and optimized, refusing to accept the frailty of morality. Jacob seems to directly address rich people in a way that addresses their sole reliance on wealth and a certain futility with the total reliance on, and there is a certain futility that comes with a total reliance on wealth. But also, Jacob does something different. Jacob addresses how their wealth is acquired, directly addressing their business practices that help them acquire wealth, especially if their wealth has come at the exploitation of the poor. Jacob appears to be directly saying to some of the rich, as previously quoted, in that they're guilty of violating Leviticus 19:13, that they did defraud their neighbor, that they did hold back wages. Jacob did reaffirm that they did exploit the poor. Could Jacob's letter in some way be, in modern application, a commentary on how Christians and CEOs and followers of Jesus of Nazareth should examine the trend of maybe CEO wage growth and incredibly large wage gaps between those who are CEOs and those who work for them? Could it be that some American churches have slowly moved towards, as an organization, entropy, and forget our primary mission, or our primary stakeholders, are the members of our community, regardless of their wealth status, and not to cater to members who give large amounts, or the loudest members who may give money And the leadership may cater to those members at the expense of members or attenders of the local body who are homeless, barely making it, and could be exploited by others in that body. Could Jacob be a commentary on equity firms and municipalities who would rather keep units empty until they can overcharge an AI or tech-related worker rather than a school teacher, police officer, nurse, mental health worker, grocery store employee, or any other people of the working class of our culture? But what does it mean for us all today in 2026? For a group of people who meet in Silicon Valley and go to a church in the 20th most expensive zip code in California, in Palo Alto, California. Like, I know, right? I thought Palo Alto was going to be up there when I saw that it was the 20th. I was like, oh my goodness. Like, hey, I thought the city would be much higher on the list, which means that it's really, really expensive to live in California. Because the reality is, with so many things beyond our control that affect our lives from day to day, our lives are being affected in this room by things that we can't control. Right now in this room, many of you are securing or even changing some of your summer plans for your families because the cost of living at the moment is absolutely impacting how you live. I'm speculating that some of you in this room are choosing summer activities for your children to participate in, and you'd love to have them participate in everything, but the cost of the activity is now going to impact you. Some of you in this room are considering different ways to commute to work because of the price of fuel. Many of you are changing what products you are buying, making meals to stretch as long as they can. Some of you who work in some of you who are working in some of these well-formed tech firms are doing the mental gymnastics, because I know some of you are considering, you're not like your other coworkers, but we have free food that's provided. Should I take that extra home to stretch a meal? Should I bring a food container or two? Because you know your coworkers do it, but there's something inside of you that don't feel right about doing. And I'm just telling you to hold on. And you're doing it because of practical reasons. You're doing it because you go, if I could just save a little bit enough, my student loan payment won't hit me as hard. Maybe there'll be just enough to get gas to get back and forth for the week. It's also not lost on me that some of you in this room have incorporated Sunday service hospitality food as a fixed cost for your household, or that quietly, some in this room are using food bank services, SNAP benefits, and are looking into ways to afford fuel, food, the energy costs, etc. Spark, we may not be a church facing some of the existential threat of life or death for being Christians, but in many ways, we can identify with the people who Jacob wrote to. Have you ever had a practical prayer? Have you ever had to ask God, how are we going to make it this month, especially with so many things beyond our control that direct you financially? I mean, there's this saying, how many of us have ever had that prayer, there is way too much month at the end of the money. God, how are we going to make it through? And I'm going to let you know in a secret. I'm going to tell you something, Spark Church. You're not alone. You're not the only one in this room who's had unexpected expenses due to life happening. Spark Church, you are not the only one in this room who's facing a season of uncertainty where you find yourself using a credit card a little bit more than you expected to or wanted to because life got a little bit more expensive. Spark Church, you are not alone if you're in a season of there's way more month than money. You are not alone if you just did your taxes, instead of getting a refund, now you actually owe money. You're not alone if you've had a relative pass away or die, and instead of doing a burial or grief ritual that you'd like to get to right away, You're kind of waiting for an insurance payout to properly honor them in a ceremony and celebrate their life because you just can't afford a memorial service right now. Spark Church, you're not alone in dealing with the anxiety of wondering, is your department in the next round of layoffs? Spark Church, you're not alone as you consider whether you should stay here in the immediate Bay Area or consider doing church remotely and move a little bit further out to places like Gilroy, Salinas, Tracy, or the Central Valley. Spark member or attender, you're not alone when you're of a family who's caught up in the regular practice of tithing, and you're actually considering, should I give this month or this pay period because, A, it's just expensive. And that extra money could fit our family budget. Spark Church, you're also not alone because God is making a way for you. You're not alone because I know that you may have got a check that was unexpected, maybe a tax return or something that's hitting an expense that you need. You're not the only one where God put it on someone's heart to give you an exact amount of money that you need to maybe meet that summer program or meet that need, or the exact amount of money to cover a bill. You're not alone because you may have found that God has provided and made a way. You may have found an extra miles on your credit card so you can kind of go visit those relatives and have that summer vacation. You're not alone because God is our provider. And I know that as believers, that is one of the hardest truths that we have to accept, that it's not on us, that it's not on like how much we make. Yes, we can go to work. Yes, we can get our side hustles. Yes, we can do all the right things and we're walking with the Lord and we've let kind of this prosperity gospel seep in and we're doing all the right things. We know we're doing all those right things. And there are times when God just tells us, hey, I got this. Because I know that I'm not the only one, that we're not the only one in the room that's actually wondering how are we going to make it this month? Because you turn on you go through your phone. You look through social media and you see that the barrel of oil is going to go up because of a conflict in Iran that you know nothing really about. That AI is replacing jobs and that there are these layoffs that are coming. Maybe you're seeing things at your firm now and it's just kind of tough. Or now you're really considering, those of you who are homeowners, like, ooh, how or what does kind of like retirement look like? Spark Church, I also want to call us to Jacob's teaching because we can't let wealth rot away our faith. We can't let wealth rot away our religion. Jacob 1:27 says, "Can we not let it rot our religion? Religion that is pure and undefiled before God the Father is this: to care for orphans and widows in their distress, and to keep oneself from being polluted or unstained by the world." The human tendency of worldly thing to do is wisely to consider or examine our budget and make cuts. And to those outside a local church context, giving to a portion of your income to a local church just doesn't make sense. It actually seems crazy, especially because we are going through some hard times economically. It just makes sense. So why give when gas prices and food prices are through the roof? And I would say because Spark Church, we are a community of faith, and sometimes our faith, it just doesn't make sense. But we live our lives guided by the teaching of a rabbi who we believe was resurrected, which doesn't make sense. And our wealth, let not the worry or anxiety of wealth in that everyday living worry away that belief. Spark Church, just like the diaspora, don't let wealth slowly rot your belief away that God is not your ultimate provider. Spark Church, don't let wealth or the anxiety of wealth stop you from donating to things like Alas and bringing baby wipes to families in need in the Half Moon Bay area. Don't let the anxiety of wealth rot us away from helping or donating to loads of love and helping families get relief from the cost of laundry. Spark Church, don't let the worry of wealth rot us away from helping and serving things like Path Gang Night or Project We Hope, which brings programs like Dignity on Wheels, which is this cool program where they bring showers to those who are homeless or the van lots, because we live in the Bay Area, a place where there is great wealth and great poverty. And we've either gone blind or somewhere know that there are parking areas and lots of people who live in really mobile homes and vans. We don't know what goes on there, but I know I've had personal experience from being a Lyft driver. I looked at them one time and thought, oh, okay, they're just vans. And it dawned on me one time catching a ride that I dropped somebody off to where their family lived. And it clicked to me that in some of those units, there are 3 and 4 and 5 people living in, and that's what their families can afford. Spark Church, it may not make sense. We don't know how we're providing, but don't let the worry of wealth rot you away from giving, from supporting those right here in the community. Spark Church, don't let the worry of wealth rot you away from helping a family or a person. If not, trust that the leadership and the board here is incredibly wise to help families and churches in this who are in need. So, Spark Church, you're not alone. Spark Church, don't let that worry or wealth rot us away from continuing to give, from continuing to be generous, from continuing to be the church. Spark Church, we are not alone. Spark Church, you are not the only one in this moment who's worried about how we're going to make it. We are incredibly blessed to live in this area, to maybe be able to afford it. But Spark Church, you are not alone. Spark Church, you're not the only one. Spark Church, we are going through this season of being teenagers together. And the cool thing is, just like an injury I experienced, there's light at the end of the tunnel. Sometimes that light seems like it's a greater distance away, but Spark Church, relief is going to come. It may not come like you want it to come, but relief is going to come. Spark Church, there is light at the end of the tunnel. Spark Church, you will experience God through this season and bless him in a way that you haven't blessed him before, because you get to experience that God, like Pastor Mark said earlier, is the God of the valley. That God walks with us while our aging parents are going home to be with the Lord. That he walks with us when we get that health news about our child. That he walks with us while we discover that we've been laid off. While he walks with us while the bills are piling up. That God is walking with us while we're trying to figure out how do we shield our children from the anxiety that we're feeling. God walks with us. And God has walked with church. I mean, God has walked with Spark Church when we were 1. God walked with us when we were 10. And God is walking with us through our teenage years. And I know this for sure. God is going to walk with us, Lord willing, when we're in navigating that early 20s of life, when we think that we know it all and life hits us again. And God is going to walk with us through the valley. God is going to walk with us in the mountaintop, and God is going to walk with us. So Spark Church, I just need you to know that we are sharing the burden together. Spark Church, you are not alone. And so we're going to move now into our time of communion, that well-honored tradition where we get to participate in the very kind of ritual of resurrection. So for in the night in which Jesus, which he was betrayed, our Lord Jesus took the bread and blessed it and broke it, giving to his disciples, saying, "Take, eat. This is my body given for me. Do this in remembrance of me." Likewise, after supper, he took the cup, gave thanks, and gave it to them, saying, "Drink this, all of you. This is my blood of the new covenant, which is shed for you and for many of the forgiveness of sins. Do this as often as you think in remembrance of me." Spark Church, we're not alone. Spark Church, we're all welcome at this table. Spark Church, let us participate in communion.